proclaim the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm your host, Aaron Broughton, and I want to welcome you to today's program. Now, on this program, we often feature different tidbits of Bible and archaeology, and I believe that archaeology simply confirms the truth that we know of in the scriptures. And you're probably wondering, though, well, how can I make this more real, and in fact, teach it even to our children? And I think there's something very unique that I'm going to share with you today about that I think you'll find fascinating. In fact, I have done this myself, even with my children. And this is what happened. The Israeli Antiquities Authority has announced the release of a new app for iPhone that allows children, as well as adults, to learn more about archaeology. It is called DigQuest Israel. And again, this is for iPhone or iPad. And it's basically an archaeological tool that basically you can play different games to hone in your skills of Bible archaeology. In fact, they go to two places, and that is to Lod. In fact, we've talked about the Lod Mosaic here just a few weeks ago. I invite you to go back into our radio archives, which you can always do at ibjm.org. Go to the Ministries tab and for radio, and you can research our archives. And if you look about the Lod Mosaic, what you can actually do at this app is to dig at that very site. And you cover different pieces, have to identify it. That's one part of the game. And as you do it, as you properly identify it, you basically get to, in the app, in the game, you get to store it in different areas and get different prizes, things like that. And so that's the Lod Mosaic. And then the other thing you can do, and I find this one very fun, is you go to Qumran, Kirbet Qumran, which is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered. And on this app, you can actually try to piece together the different fragments of the scrolls that were discovered. And as you piece them together, and some are harder than others, but I think there's really it's really fun for all ages to try to do this. You basically get to scan it as you would as an archaeologist, and then you can even be able to read it, at least a portion of the finding that you have on that app. You can actually hear it read in Hebrew. So it gives you really a very interesting look at what you're trying to discover, just like a real archaeologist. Now, this app has about 30 different levels in these two unique games, and about 50 images of different historical treasures as well. And so, again, you can do this. Again, it's called DigSite Israel. And again, this is from the Israeli Antiquities Authority. Now, there's an archaeologist that's named Gabe, who was inspired by a collection of Real Antiquities Authority archaeologists. And Gabe is the one who guides the children through these games. But like I said, this isn't really just for children. It can be for adults as well. And additional games are being planned right now, said the Israeli Antiquities Authority, and all which will be available on Android phones as well. So right now it's just for iPhones and for iPad, but again, they're going to be marketing it to Android as well. And so if you love the Bible and archaeology, just as like I do, I invite you to download this app, DigQuest Israel. And I think this will be a blessing to you. And so you get to be an amateur archaeologist as well. By the way, I just want to point out to you, if you're interested about Bible and archaeology, that IBJM is going to be hosting a very special tour to Israel in this coming March. And you'll get to actually go and see places like Qumran and Jerusalem, the Galilee area. By the way, if you would like to do something for your pastor or your pastor and his wife, maybe send them on this trip of a lifetime with IBJM to Israel. There's still plenty of room available. I invite you to come with us on that trip. People who have gone to Israel said they have never been the same upon returning from these special places. My life has been changed personally by doing that, and I think it will be yours as well. And so invite you to do that. So as we talk about, again, this new app on archaeology for iPhone and eventually for Android, invite you to put the pieces of the puzzle together. May in fact do this before you come on your trip to Israel, and then you can put the pieces of the puzzle literally together, not just on your app, but you can put them together on your mind as you search the Word of God. And so, anyways, hope you have a great day today. May you be blessed as you seek the Lord. But for now, let's now turn our attention to our good friend and Jewish believer, Brother Mark Oshman, with today's Bible lesson.
Thank you for joining our daily radio program. We will continue our study of the Jewish tabernacle and the items contained inside it. The Hebrew noun translated as tabernacle was mishkan. That derived from a verb, shakan, meaning to abide. The verbal form appeared in Numbers chapter 24, in connection with the Israelites who resided in their tents. The noun mishkan could refer to an animal's den, as it did in Job chapter 39, when God referred to an animal, quote, whose house I have made the wilderness and the barren land his dwellings, unquote. The term mishkan could also allude to a human residence. Most of the time, though, it specifically designated the tabernacle. God designed the tabernacle as a place where he could live in the midst of the Israelite encampment. As recorded in Exodus chapter 25, God directed Moses, quote, let them make me a sanctuary that I may dwell among them. According to all that I show thee, to the pattern of the tabernacle, and the pattern of all the instruments thereof, even so shall ye make it, unquote. God never intended the tabernacle to represent his residence on earth. As Solomon rhetorically asked in 1 Kings chapter 8, quote, will God indeed dwell on the earth, unquote. He answered his own question by noting, quote, behold, the heaven and the heaven of heavens cannot contain thee, unquote. As a spirit, God did not need a building in which he could live. The tabernacle made it possible for God to manifest his presence among his people, in a manner of speaking. The amount of detail that God provided about that structure's materials and its contents indicated the tabernacle's importance in the spiritual life of the Jewish nation. God wanted the Jews to appreciate their unique relationship with him every time they visited the tabernacle. In the 12th chapter of Deuteronomy, he gave the Jewish people a reason why he had commanded them to build the tabernacle. He said, quote, take heed to thyself that thou offer not thy burnt offerings in every place that thou seest, but in the place where the Lord shall choose in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, and there thou shalt do all that I command thee, unquote. According to 1 Samuel chapter 1, Elkanah and his family continued to bring their sacrifices to the tabernacle hundreds of years later. God continued to utilize the tabernacle as a meeting place, even after the Israelites were no longer in the wilderness. According to Joshua chapter 18, the Jewish nation set up the tabernacle of the city of Shiloh, where they subdivided the land of Canaan among the tribes. The tabernacle remained at Shiloh until Solomon had the temple constructed. Afterward, the monarch brought up the Ark of the Covenant to Jerusalem, as noted in 1 Kings chapter 8. In the 25th chapter of Exodus, God told Moses how to fashion the candlestick, that is, the lampstand, for the tabernacle. The Israelites needed to use a piece of solid gold. It was not to be hollowed out. This lampstand had six branches, three coming out of one side and three from the other side. A seventh branch came from the middle of the candlestick. Each of the seven branches contained bowls to light the oil for light and the wick to kindle that oil. God required the priest to clean each of the seven individual bowls holding the olive oil and the wick for the candlestick. To perform that task, as recorded in Exodus chapter 37, the priest used snuffers and fire pans. These were also made from pure gold. The lampstand contained ornamentation consisting of, quote, four bowls make like unto almonds with their knops and their flowers, unquote. The Hebrew word rendered as knops may refer to small crowns, which it did in the second chapter of the book of Zechariah. According to Leviticus chapter 24, the lights from the lampstand burned continually. Since the candlestick furnished the only source of light within the tabernacle area, that arrangement helped the priest avoid bumping into any of the other furnishings. The image of a candlestick played an important role in prophetic Jewish literature. In Zechariah chapter 4, an angel woke up that prophet and asked him to describe what he saw. Here's what Zechariah replied, quote, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick all of gold with a bowl on the top of it, and his seven lamps thereon, and seven pipes to the seven lamps which are upon the top thereof, and two olive trees by it, one on the right side of the bowl and the other on the left side thereof, unquote. The olive trees may have served as channels, providing olive oil to continually flow into the pipes and keeping the lamps lit. What did Zechariah's vision mean? The prophet himself asked that question and received this reply. Quote, This is the word of the Lord unto Zerubbabel, saying, Not by might, nor by power, but by my spirit, saith the Lord of hosts. Who art thou, O great mountain? Before Zerubbabel thou shalt become a plain, and he shall bring forth the headstone thereof with shoutings, crying, Grace, grace unto it. Unquote. According to Jewish tradition, the candlestick in the tabernacle represented the nation of Israel, in the sense of shedding light upon their pagan neighbors. The Jews interpreted the passage in Isaiah chapter 42 with reference to being, quote, a light of the Gentiles, unquote. The Jews interpreted that passage as an allusion to themselves. Paul employed that same figure of speech in Romans chapter 2, rhetorically castigating any Jew who deemed himself, quote, a light of them which are in darkness, unquote. Commentators have disagreed over how to interpret the two olive trees. Some argued that the trees refer to the twofold revelation of God, namely the Old Testament and the New Testament. Other commentators contended that the two olive trees depicted the Jews as a natural branch of God's family, and the Gentiles as a branch engrafted into God's family. However, the context of the passage in Zechariah implied that neither of these interpretations were adequate. In the fourth chapter of his prophecy, when Zechariah asked the angel about the two trees, that angel replied, quote, These are the two anointed ones that stand by the Lord of the whole earth, unquote. The previous chapter of Zechariah had dealt with a vision Zechariah had involving the Jewish high priest at that time, a man by the name of Joshua. The fourth chapter of Zechariah mentioned the governor Zerubbabel. Thus the Zechariah passage could have tended to refer to these two individuals, either as historical figures or as representative of the religious leadership and secular leadership of the Jewish nation. More than that, though, both Joshua the high priest and Zerubbabel the governor served as types of Jesus Christ. Bible students should note that Jesus Christ fulfilled the roles both of a priest, the high priest, and of the ruler. As to the high priest, the author of Psalm 110 proclaimed the Messiah as, quote, a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek, unquote. As for Jesus Christ as king, David in the second Psalm identified him as such. In the 60th chapter of the book of Isaiah, that prophet predicted that Jesus Christ would bring light. He wrote, quote, Arise, shine, for thy light is come, and the glory of the Lord is risen upon thee, unquote. Isaiah added that, quote, The Gentiles shall come to thy light, and kings to the brightness of thy rising, unquote. Paul cited the latter part of that prophecy in Acts chapter 13, when he spoke to the Jews assembled in the synagogue of Pisidian Antioch. According to John chapter 1, Jesus Christ himself was, quote, the true light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world, unquote. The Savior himself confirmed that in the 8th and 9th chapter of John, when he referred to himself as the light of the world. Those who have come to saving faith in Jesus Christ likewise function as spiritual lights, shining in a world of darkness. In his Sermon on the Mount, Jesus Christ referred to them as, quote, the light of the world, unquote. Paul ratified that assessment in Ephesians chapter 5, when he told the Ephesian Christians that, quote, Now are ye light in the Lord, walk as children of light, unquote. Just as the candlestick shed light within the tabernacle, Jesus Christ shed the light of God upon Jews and Gentiles alike. Therefore, Christians ought to, quote, Let your light so shine before men, that they may see your good works, and glorify your Father, which is in heaven, unquote. As types and models of Jesus Christ, Christians should shed spiritual illumination everywhere they go. Thank you for listening to this radio program. We invite you to come back for future radio Bible studies about the tabernacle and its contents.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee, 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom.